And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces. For the next half hour, we're going to be talking with Megan O'Leary and Vesper Moore about Soterra Las Cruces and what sounds like an interesting and innovative way to look at the issue of treating people with psychiatric illness. Mm-hmm. So first of all, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
I know you have an open house coming up, so why don't we start with that, let people know when and where that's happening, and then we'll dive into the discussion.
All right. So, yes, we have an open house on this, actually tomorrow, from noon to 2. Lots of prep work going into this, so it's very exciting. And then I just want to make sure, Vesper, do you want to share some information with the address and everything?
Absolutely, yeah. So that's we're on 2513 Twilight Ridgeway for this event. That's where our house is. Folks are welcome to join. We will have parking available, and you know it's going to be such a great event. We will be having state representatives, local officials, and partners from across New Mexico joining us, as well as some great music and food. So feel free and join us.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about what it is you're doing.
So this has been, you've talked to Al Galves. Mm-hmm. So he's been promoting Soterra Las Cruces for the past 5 years, working tirelessly with legislators to get funding. We did secure funding. Soterra is an older model, but it's proven to be much more effective than traditional psychiatric treatment, especially hospitalization. So we're mostly, it's a home. So it's a 5-bedroom, 4-bathroom home, home-like setting, very different from the clinical hospital setting, the white walls, the restraints. We don't restrain people. We do deal with people in crisis, and we do accept people who deal with what's termed psychosis, altered states, maybe hearing, seeing things that other people aren't. Paranoia often accompanies that. So it's really an alternative. Because for a lot of people, myself included, I did experience psychosis in college and was hospitalized. The hospitalization was much more terrifying and traumatic than the psychosis itself, to be perfectly honest. So I'm really excited and passionate about this alternative because I think it's necessary. Recovery rates for people who experience psychosis and are in and out of hospitals are very low. So whatever we're doing, it's not really working right now. So,
it seems to me that we're warehousing people. We're getting them off the streets, and that's all we're really caring about.
Exactly. Out of sight, out of mind.
Yes. Yeah. And not a danger.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's, unfortunately, due to media representation and a lot of different things, I think there's an immediate association of danger with psychosis. And that's honestly not always the case. So,
Vesper, anything you'd like to add?
Absolutely. I think some of the work when we talk about this treatment model, particularly, and I mean, I prefer to think of it as we are reimagining treatment, as we are really pursuing this idea with having a lot of the folks who work on our team directly throughout each of these shifts will be certified peer support workers. And then we have our psychiatrists, we'll have our licensed mental health counselor, we have Dr. O'Leary as well, whose background is in disability studies, who's joining us here, in the space, which I think will be very important for the social environment and the social setup and kind of the ideas beyond warehousing people, which I'm so glad you just named there, Tim. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the most important parts of this is that this is really growing on a legacy of moving beyond that idea of warehousing people. And studies show, if you look at some of the studies, particularly through Lancet Psychiatry, you can see that 84% of individuals who are experiencing like early psychosis when they have relationship building built early on in that episodic experience, their rate of wellness is much higher. Like it is significantly higher. So some of that work is really what has driven us to implementing and bringing Soteria to the Las Cruces community, and what advocates on the ground have been asking for such a long time. And we're very grateful that, you know, HB 87, the Soteria residential bill, passed in the House, and that we're able to do this work. And our house is currently Medicaid funded, and there's going to be some great work that's going to be done. And I think Megan named it well. It's an alternative. It's a great additional community resource. And if we could prevent people from being warehoused entirely and save their lives, that makes all the work, you know, much more worth it.
Could you say a little bit more about how it is that somebody experiencing a crisis episode would seek help there, how long they would be at the house, whether these are single occupancy rooms, you know, just exactly sort of how it would work?
Okay. Sure. So we have what we call a recommendation form. Mm-hmm. So you go to the website. The person can fill the form out on their own, or somebody can help them fill it out on their behalf. So we get recommendations through that, through the Kiva website. I can leave all the information there. And it asks questions, very specific questions. It's not too complicated to fill out because it's a drop-down menu, but it asks questions like symptomology, like are you seeing things that aren't there, hearing things? Are you feel like you're in imminent danger that nobody else sees? And then so we'll do a phone call and talk to the person who's being recommended, and then we'll do an orientation if it looks like they'd be a good fit for the home. We'll do an orientation. Everyone does get their own space, their own bedroom. So we will be serving five, we call them guests at a time. So we provide all the groceries, food, healthy, mostly healthy options, of course. We have community meals. And I think, and as Vesper mentioned, it is mostly staffed by peers. So people who can relate and really understand the experience. And it's all about kind of the individual, the guest, leading their own recovery process. So we treat them as human beings who are going through a really rough time. There's a lot of research that says psychosis is, altered states is related to traumatic experiences that oftentimes people don't even remember. It's just kind of a different way of navigating stress. You know, some people's bodies break down, some people's minds break down under extreme stress. So recognizing, I mean, it sounds simple and common sense, but recognizing that we're dealing with human beings here who are suffering. So
are you planning on working with the county's crisis triage center at all?
Yes, we actually have a few peers that we hired from the Crisis Triage Center, so we have some connections there. We did give them invitations to our open house, so definitely looking at getting recommendations there, letting everyone know. We're trying to let everyone know because there's so many amazing mental health supports in Las Cruces, and we're trying to let everyone know that this is an additional, as Vesper said, this is an additional support.
I'm curious about what the reaction has been from the homeowners around your new Soteria house.
Yes. So far, we haven't gotten any pushback, but Vesper can probably speak to that. I know they have in Worcester, Massachusetts, Kiva Centers has what's called peer respite homes, and very similar model. It's just a shorter stay. It's 7 to 10 days, and then at Soteria they can stay, to answer your question, they can stay 3 to 6 months, so okay, as necessary. So Vesper, do you want to talk about any pushback that you've experienced maybe from NIMBY or neighborhood associations?
Yeah, so, So far in our community in Las Cruces, we haven't experienced any pushback, but I also think Las Cruces is such a rich community for recovery resources, mm-hmm. for trying to build out behavioral health resources, a lot of substance use resources, and some mental health crisis. We have partnered with, you know, crisis triage. We are working with the Behavioral Health Services Division in terms of service implementation and all of those things. We're going to traditional provider meetings through the LC3 Coalition and a lot of other spaces. So we're very involved in the provider community. So we're very coordinating in that way. But then in the local community, the home that we're actually operating out of next door, it actually belonged to the daughter of one of our neighbors initially, and we've had discussions, and we've actually invited our neighbors to the open house. We did mm-hmm. lovely, I believe there were cookie sets and mm-hmm. invitations just a couple days ago. So we're really hoping that, you know, the community will continue to be as welcoming as they are. We haven't experienced that pushback. I will say for our peer run respites, we've definitely experienced pushback in towns before. One thing that I will say is that from a human rights perspective and from a service delivery perspective, when we talk about the Americans with Disabilities Act, American society has an obligation to not discriminate against people on the basis of their disability. It's clear as day, Section 202 mm-hmm. in the Americans with Disabilities Act. You cannot deny a person on the basis of their disability, and that includes psychosis. So I think, you know, this really fulfills that promise, and I think what we can offer to a community, and I think communities realize over time is, wow, they're like, actually, this is a great resource for my son. This is a great resource for my daughter, my mother, you know. And in times where we've actually had issues in the past implementing some of these services, because everyone is concerned about this idea of the neighborhood becoming more dangerous, or because of some of the things that we're often labeled with, right? That people who experience psychosis are fundamentally more dangerous. And, you know, what really leads to that is limited resources, people struggling on the streets and doing what they have to do to survive. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have this initiative that's actively working with folks, it actually keeps the community significantly safer. So I think usually we end up talking about that. We've had circumstances where we've had a local mechanic, for example, say, actually, this service saved my son 2 years ago, and I'm so glad they're moving into our neighborhood. And we actually had that as part of a testimony in a town that was very much fundamentally against us having a presence there. And just to explain a little bit more about our peer-run respites, too, our peer-run respites operate 5 to 7 days. They are for everyone who's experiencing a mental health crisis. They're not specific to psychosis, but we've had a lot of people who've experienced psychosis come to our houses and have these experiences. And we operate 3 of them. We've been doing that the last 7 years. So it's really exciting to be able to bring this to the Las Cruces community. There's a lot more interest in having more approaches like this to also help keep the community more safe by giving people the immediate resources they need without taking away their civil liberties and freedoms.
I'm curious, will there be any kind of screening process or before you accept people into your home? I assume you'll have to do mm-hmm. some kind of background to know who it is you're inviting in.
Right. So we're not going to specifically do background checks, but we will collect a lot of information through, you know, there will be an intensive process to figure out if they're a good fit on the house's behalf. So I'm the project manager and then the program manager, Nora Candelaria, who's been a peer advocate here for 30 years, will be responsible for doing a lot of the screening. And yeah, so.
Yeah. I know for your open house that you're having a shuttle service from Morningstar Church.
Yes.
Are they partnering or helping you at all with this endeavor?
You know what? We have actually partnered with them a bit. We do a lot of community service. Our team of peers actually went to Morningstar to help put together boxes for food delivery. so in the community. And we've done some work with Community of Hope. We did a presentation there, Casa de Pelegrinos. So we did a food distribution there, food packaging and distribution there. So, yeah, we're trying to, you know, just get the word out, create these partnerships, really be a part of the Las Cruces community. So it's not just like taking something from Massachusetts and plopping it into Las Cruces. You know, we're really integrated in the community, as our staff is as well, too. So.
Vesper, can you talk a little bit more about the legislation? I didn't follow that one at all. What is it, and do you anticipate that because of that, this will be the first of many more to come?
Yes, great question. Yeah, HB 87 was basically, it was a financial procurement bill for psychosis treatment in Dona Ana County. And that really came as a result of some of the work that the advisory committee and Dr. Al Galves were doing originally, which was basically, you know, we'd look at emergency on-room boarding related to psychosis in Dona Ana County. There were 1,200 cases in 2021, and there's only been increasing cases. And the amount of folks that might be having an experience that might not be diagnosed with a psychotic condition, right, that could immediately access a resource like Soteria will be such a life-saving resource because we won't necessarily require that initial diagnosis. They could come in with a non-specified condition of psychosis, and we end up working with them to navigate it and understand it. This could support mothers who lose a child and experience, you know, psychosis, or who give birth and experience psychosis, a person who is grieving and hears the voice of their mother or father, but have not been diagnosed with schizophrenia prior, right, or anything like that. Because trauma can lead to psychosis as well, is really the perspective that we are taking. So with the legislation itself, there was an initial startup fund, you know, really the first, it was $1.5 million. To start up the home, and that's everything that you need to keep everything operational, to do the repairs, to do things for state licensing, all the things that are required to make sure that the home is in compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, state regulations, and all of that. So that initial bill was put out to bid. There was an advisory committee that advocated for that bill and invited Kiva centers to, you know, us as an organization to support the community in implementing the model and then hiring and bringing on rich community leaders who have been serving the Las Cruces community for years, giving them additional training, education, and the resources needed, and then teaching them about the model, you know, connecting with folks at Soteria Vermont, because there's a Soteria house in Vermont, and having them come in and do training for us, you know, was such a wonderful experience. And I think, you know, that legislation really led to that work. And I think a big part of it is that when you look at the history of institutions across the country, see some of the work, and then you see the investments in Las Cruces, Dona Ana County and New Mexico right now in community behavioral health centers, community mental health centers, community-based initiatives to keep people from being warehoused. You know, it's really a legacy of that and continuing that work. Fortunately, we were able to carry funds from the previous bill, the former fiscal year. We had, one more to just kind of like an additional $300,000 to kind of go into this year. And then now we will be like billing insurance to be able to sustain the model from there. So we're very excited about the community investment. The city is excited. I don't know if that fully answers your question, but yeah, I do anticipate many more.
Yeah, no, it did. I am curious. I'm pretty certain that once you guys get up and going, there's going to be a big demand. You're going to end up having a waiting list, and how will you decide? Because that's obviously you're not going to be able to help everybody who's going to need it. So, how do you go through that process?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. So I think some people will need more support. Some people do do well with traditional models. I think what we're really looking at is more early onset psychosis. Not necessarily the first time somebody's experienced it, but somebody that can really benefit from more earlier intervention, right. More relationship building.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You mentioned Al Galves and his influence in this, and somebody who in this community has been, a champion for the mentally ill since I've been here, and that's 24, 25 years. But he has often been at odds with some of his peers over the issue of medication.
Yeah.
So do you guys take a more natural or an approach against what some people, myself included, believe has been an over-medication of the American public? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So, yes, I agree. There has been intense. We do kind of fall on the intense over-medication and how much the pharmaceutical companies are benefiting from this over-medication.
Of course.
But mostly what we're all about is self-determination. So, some people really don't respond well to medication. There's a lot of rough side effects, especially with older medications, older antipsychotics. So we want to respect people's agency and self-determination. And if they decide, maybe I would like to taper off and see how it goes, we will support that. We will work with a psychiatrist to support the tapering. I think what does happen a lot with medication, I guess they call it non-compliance. I don't like that term. But, I think people, there's such a push to be compliant with medication all the time. Mm-hmm. So I think people don't tell anyone when they stop.
Right.
And they stop cold turkey. And that can do a really intense damage to your brain. I think that's where a lot of the crises stem from, honestly. So we don't want to risk that. So we take an approach where they actually tell us and work with somebody. And for some people, medication does work. I do take medication.
Yeah.
I'm not anti-medication, but I do recognize it as a very small piece of my recovery pie. So definitely community relationships have really helped that. So, yeah.
And if I can just add,
please.
The initial Soteria house was in San Jose, California. It was through a National Institute for Mental Health study done by psychiatrist Lauren Mosier. It was funded by the federal government. And the idea was to support people and divert people from needing to really lean on things like psychiatric medication in the first place through a relationship building model.
Right.
But we understand at Soteria Las Cruces that the modern manifestation of this is most people are going to come in and they're already going to have psychiatric medications. So really the best modality is self-determination. And we do this at our peer-run respites. People are responsible for taking their own medications. They're responsible for bringing in their own medications. And if for any reason they chose to adjust their medication, maybe come off of a medication after being psychiatrically hospitalized. For a lot of people, when they're psychiatrically hospitalized, they get put on new medications after a significant mm-hmm. life interruption.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a student who is studying 5 days out of the week, staying up at night, and then you might experience a psychotic episode, and then you're brought into a hospital, and then you are put on an antipsychotic medication for that period of time, but you're like, this is actually due to me being sleep deprived and I don't need to be on this anymore. Soteria is a great resource for you. It will help you with potentially getting back to work and doing a lot of these things. So I think we have to think of it in that way. Self-determination is so important. Personal autonomy is so important. And I will say that the reason why I think there was a big move with the American Psychiatric Association to focus more on, pharmaceuticals as a primary entry point of treatment or more of a singular approach, right? But when we look at this, it is fundamentally biopsychosocial. When we look at mental health conditions as a whole, the causation is etiological. It is environment. It is other factors, right? And when we don't consider that, we are doing a disservice to the public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll add, I actually talked to Al Galbs about this yesterday, but, you know, there's been so much research put into finding the cause of this brain disease, quote unquote, and still nothing. I mean, there's no blood test that determines, you know, your diagnosis. It is very, you know, it's still very much up in the air what the cause is. And I think they're linking it, as Vesper said, to the biopsychosocial model, that it is. I mean, even psychiatrists that were convinced it was all a brain disease are now saying, oh, no, the environment has a lot to do with it. Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about the open house and what you hope people will be able to learn and come away from that with?
Yeah. I think well, we're going to have, you know, food performer mariachi. I just want them a mariachi.
Of course
singer.
You are.
Yes, of course. I think we just want people to be aware of the resource, aware that these exist, yeah. And to see it's a beautiful home. So we had people from the advisory board decorate and provide the furniture. Everyone has a desk in their room, a nice bed, pillows. We have a little welcoming kit for everyone. That includes like bathroom essentials. It's just, I think we want to show people how welcoming the environment is and how different it is from what we're doing from the traditional hospital. So, and if you want to add anything, Vesper.
No, I think that's a great thing to know that we're there, to know that we're here to help families, help communities. We're doing community service. We're hoping to do peer support groups in the community and maybe mobile work where we're supporting people out in the community. We're still looking to see how we can do more of that. We want folks to know that we're grateful to be there. We want the state of New Mexico to know that we're grateful for this opportunity and just so excited to be welcomed and really, you know, get to work and really support the people.
I, you won't have enough time to answer this question, but I'm going to answer it, ask it anyway. Is it sustainable? It seems to me like a great thing, but it's going to be way more expensive than traditional care. Is it the kind of thing that can be replicated and have a mass, you know, mass result as opposed to just helping a few people, I guess is my question. I apologize for asking this late, but go ahead, please.
I think I can answer it as well as I can. If you include a mobile component, you can reach more people. If you invest in more homes in a county and you were to divide them kind of by county and think about where they could serve well, they could support more people. If you were to include and integrate something like peer-run respite where people stay shorter periods of time, mental health crisis 5 to 7 days, you could reach hundreds of people in a year. It's cheaper financially because... Because you're looking at like $100 a day out of program cost per person versus thousands of dollars an evening for a psychiatric hospitalization. There's a lot of federal studies that actually show this. If you look at some of the SAMHSA data, you can see the comparison of cost. So there's a huge incentive for communities to do this, and I think for people to want to invest in it.
Well, anytime we have more questions than we have time for, it means it was a good discussion. So I want to thank both of you for joining us. We are going to have to cut it off here. Just remind people once again that the open house is coming up tomorrow. And thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.